which out the door.
View of the board. Well, friends, if you're over the top, a little more there.
I think we'll start.
Latino.
I'd like to start by finding out just a little bit and not taking a lot of time for it, but just to go around quickly to ask you, you know, why did you come to this particular session so that I get some background on what your interests are and why you would come to one on health and wholeness and holistic and things like that. That would help me to feel that I'm talking to people that I know a little bit. I've also tried to, this is a discussion of health and wholeness. It's not the one on world religions. That's over there. So you can all go now. I changed the room around because while I won't be using the blackboard much today, the other days I probably will, the whiteboard. I was sitting over here for Bible study, and I noticed the light was so great that I just saw silhouettes over there. And I couldn't see the speaker very well, so I moved over here so you wouldn't have to look in the light. Now all I see are silhouettes. I take it you're there, but I'm going to come over closer to you. So, would you just tell me briefly why did you happen to come? Can we just start with you?
Okay, because I'm fascinated in what you're going to talk about specifically, and I suppose maybe my interest is intensified after having just gone through my mother's death, Jenny Litt. And I've put a lot of thinking into both health, wholeness, and the human process.
Well, you've got an adequate reason.
Yeah.
Carol?
Doris? I'm interested in this because we live in the La Serena Retirement Village, which is owned by the Lutheran Church, and it also has care facilities. You can either live independently or with care. And I'm interested in all the different kinds of facilities that are available in the
healthcare.
I think we need to be ready. Kind of have one picked out anyway, when the time comes that we need special care.
Doris and I grew up together, so we were in college together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have an interest.
Oh, that's Chuck. I can
Chuck,
see you. Now.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have an interest in the subject generally, but I think you announced for today looking at the parish. And I have a particular interest in that. What you'll be saying about that.
Fine.
I'm Jim Garrett. Chuck just stole my line. I was interested in what you were going to say in connection to the health field and the parish.
Yeah, the parish.
You can be interested in it too.
I'm a geriatric nurse, and so I'm interested particularly in parish becoming involved in health, healing, wholeness.
Let's just go back here.
I'm interested in the subject because I just found it necessary to place my mother in a nursing home.
I see.
It's also my disease. I'm interested in it for all of us.
Okay.
Fine. I'm Gertrude. I just gone to a recent death with my husband 2 months ago.
Who minds it so well.
Right. And I was so aware of what Christian community was. And support from all over the country, but locally as well, and the hospital and the kind of care their church members were, and so aware of how little I had helped people who had gone through the same experience, the lesson was really helpful and necessary.
I'm interested in health related nature. I'm a nurse, and I just really feel like we're barking up the wrong tree so often when we're putting on band-aids, and I'm really interested in preventive.
She's saying it just the way I think it should be said.
My parents are getting older, and I'm concerned for them, and also what I can do with people that I love and how I can help their health and wholeness.
All right.
Okay, I'm from First Lutheran in St. Peter, and we've had the privilege of having Dr. Granger with us before, but
since he was there, we have begun a holistic health committee, and I have been on it.
Oh.
I'll come along and see what more I can learn.
I'm just interested in health. Well, we were interested in a few more refinements. We've already started down the road of a kind of lifestyle, because we're said to be senior citizens, but we don't feel like it.
You don't look it either.
Oh, thanks. But also in our mission church too, I thought maybe there's some things that we, I could pass on to them.
I'm her old husband. I believe in holistic philosophy. I believe in preventive medicine rather than cure. We have to have cure, of course. And I think we ourselves are to be responsible for our own health.
Well said.
Building in Washington, D.C. area. In Washington, D.C., there's a very successful holistic health center in the Reformation Lutheran Church. Well, that's not the only reason I came here. I don't even belong to that church, but I've heard about Dr. Granger. I read what he's written, and I'm interested in the movement for the,
yes,
the area, because I think it's most logical for the church to be concerned with this area.
Bye.
I do volunteer work with the National Lutheran Home in Washington, and I have been interested in the subject of geriatric care, and also because I recognize it.
Oh, you read a book.
Yeah, I recognize you, yes, your book and your writings and all that sort of thing.
Okay.
I'm a teacher, and I'm interested in...
You're a teacher?
Yeah.
Yes.
In educating children and adults as well on preventative medicine and holistic health.
Good.
I'm a pastor. I'm interested in the parish involvement, and I'd also like to find out eventually why holistic is spelled with an H.
Why it has two spellings.
Yeah.
I was doing social work at another holistic health center in Washington, D.C., the Church of the Savior, and we were based on the model that you presented, so I was really interested in hearing that
You're at the Columbia Road Center?
Right.
And you're a social worker there?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm delighted to hear that, because we started with the name Holistic when we started that center, and there was so much opposition to the word that we changed it to Columbia Road.
Yeah.
And the two centers are very dissimilar, and yet very similar to some extent. And hers is the oldest, and this is younger, the one at the Church of the Reformation. Yes?
I'm a nutritionist. I'm a nutritionist.
Oh.
And this last year, the church I was going to had a health clinic within the church setting. And that, I thought, was very good, but I also was working in a place where I saw it. They did not have the dimension that the church added. I worked in a hospital where I saw that that was very needed in a lot of situations, a lot of people that were not getting better that possibly could have been if they had the added dimension.
But you said you're working in a clinic in a church now, or you have?
No, I worked in a hospital, but the church where I was going to had a clinic.
They did have a clinic?
Yeah.
Any special type?
Well, they did. It wasn't so medical. They dealt a lot with nutrition and also with therapy, counseling a lot. Although they did have some doctors that also.
That's all right. Thank you.
I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, and one of my functions is of course preventive medicine. But I'm particularly interested in the area of inner healing and prayer therapy, whether it be for inner healing or for physical healing.
Right.
I'm a social worker, and sometimes I work in the schools with children mostly, and I'm feeling sort of called to maybe do something else, or I don't know what, but anyway, I'm very, very interested in holism.
Right.
Well, I'm a mother raising a 12-year-old son now and having raised two daughters ages 20. I'm very interested in the proper care of ourselves from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Not just starting from the reach of age 4 here in our lives,
right.
And also interested for my parents.
I'm on the church staff at the Lutheran Fargo, and we are thinking of going into this. I'm very interested in how the parish can get involved.
I belong to her, and I'm interested from the point that I passed 40, and I'm interested in the aspects of holistic approach.
I'm the mother, and I deal with grief.
thinking you had conquered it, and then back again.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
That's the big one. That's the big one. We miss anybody? Yes.
Hi, I'm Paul. I recently went through with the death of my mother, and I'm also involved in emergency medicine.
You are?
Professionally, and a strong interest.
Well, this is a very interesting group with lots of different talents, believe me. Did we miss you last time?
Yes. I was a pastor for 15 years at Valparaiso University, and now I'm professor of doctrinal theology at Concordia Seminary.
Wow, I was down in Jerusalem.
And I missed you.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Had a great
I had to come to home.
I'm Bobby. I've been to several schools of pastoral care and heard about holistic medicine then. And since then, our church has started Stephen's series, and I'm going to be helping with that this year. So I'm hoping mm-hmm. some of those things can come.
Does any other church here have a Stephen's series?
Mm-hmm. No? Behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's the second time around for us. Our church is known for being one of the coldest, least welcoming churches in the ALC, and we tried it once, and we're going to try it again.
Good. I think our church can hold its own with your church.
I'm a member of it, so I'm partly to blame.
Did I get you? Thank you.
Yes, you did.
All right.
A couple more upstairs.
Oh. Hi. Yeah. I just walked in, so I haven't caught up. My clothes are dry.
One behind you.
Lee Hester.
Yes. I have taught for many years in both schools of medicine and schools of veterinary medicine. And my concern for the present curriculum is that too often the students are taught to deal with disease rather than with the individual that has the disease or the family in which the disease occurs. And in veterinary medicine, of course, the patient and the client. And I'm also concerned about almost a total lack of the health professionals in recognizing the place of animals in the society, where over half the people have companion animals. And we warehouse all kinds of old people in the nursing homes, convalescent homes, and government housing, taking away from them at that point in their life the only thing that for many of them that gives them unconditional love, gives them security, a need to be alive, organizes their life. And I'm talking about pets. They kill their pets and haul them off to the nursing homes where they're not allowed to have any animals. And I've talked to all kinds of people in a lot of nursing homes in which they are in pathologic grief many years after this event.
Very important. Yes, we almost forgot you.
From a parish pastor's perspective, interested in it. And I think coming from a community where a great deal has not been done and little has been said in the area of holistic medicine.
All right, let's...
There's a few others upstairs.
Oh, fine.
I work in healthcare and in a profession that I think has a particular concern of dealing with the whole person. I work in therapy and recreation. And so believe in a holistic approach. And also just with the changing healthcare scene, I think, you know, more and more the cost of healthcare is, you know, being so cut back. And I think if we can deal with care in other kinds of settings and other kinds of things and the preventive approach and just dealing with people and seeing, I work in psychiatry and seeing that we need to do more blending together of the spiritual as well as all the other kinds of modalities.
What she's saying is true. There is a revolution going on in healthcare. Mm-hmm. It's a quiet revolution. Many people don't even know it's going on. But it's changing almost from month to month. We can see it in the hospitals. Yes?
I'm a retired public health nurse, and I'm interested in holistic movement, and we've had several sessions in our church, and also a friend of mine who's a lawyer. He's interested in holistic healing, and so I just was very interested also to see what I can learn about it.
The community of Northfield, where we live, has an active volunteer program that's established the hospice program,
which I'm interested in. And then personally, I'm interested in the dealing of caring for older parents. Our mother is living with us now. And I'm also dealing with anger with my parents who are facing grief of a different sort because of economic problems for the farmers, having lost their farm through bankruptcy.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Boy, we've touched on about 25 different subjects. You can see the health field is a big one. We probably should just start by saying that the health field is now the second largest industry in America. The second largest. It now has more employees than the government has. So it's a huge field, and it's taking 10% of our total national product each year, it's going up each year. I happen to think that the church is one of the great institutions of our culture, great enough to stand up to the health field and to say some things need changing, as our nurse said, that we've been using a Band-Aid approach, and as doctor has said upstairs, that it's disease-oriented, and that medical schools should really be called schools of disease. So let's start with the idea of looking at the community in which each of us lives and think of the parish church and ask ourselves in what way can that possibly happen, that we can use the parish church. If a pollster were to come to your community to ask a number of questions about things in that community, and if one of the questions was, what are the health agencies in this community? My guess is that most of the people would answer with the name of a local hospital or two, and maybe some well-known medical clinic. Technically, those are not health agencies. Those are sickness agencies. They take care of us after we get sick, and we need them desperately. And they have done an absolutely wonderful job for the last 100 years. Well, if those aren't health agencies, what are the health agencies in any community? I think of five offhand. There are probably more. Each of these, if they're in good shape, are keeping people well. If these are in poor shape, they're making people sick. And the five that I think of are the home, the school, the church, and other voluntary organizations like the YMCA and so on, the workplace, and finally the public health department. The public health department is not a very exciting department. It's the lowest on the totem pole. Most doctors are not interested in it. Fewer than 1% of doctors are related to it. Public health departments are run almost entirely by nurses. But I'm told that if public health departments were to close suddenly across the country, within 3 years we would be in desperate shape with epidemics of one kind or another. They do the things that are related to preventive medicine. Preventive medicine, you can call it preventative medicine if you wish, but they're mostly moving toward just preventive medicine now. Preventive medicine in the curriculum of medical schools is the least exciting part of the medical school curriculum. I know, because that's the department I'm in. Students hate it, and the way it's taught now in most medical schools is dull, dull, dull. Epidemiology, statistics, dry, dry books. We have like 16 lectures that we give to the freshman class. I'm number 16. The first 15 lectures are given by what I think are very dry statistical people who've been there longer than I have. And by the time I get there, there's almost nobody left out of the class of 250 students. They just don't come anymore. You're down to a baker's dozen. And I'm discouraged, terribly discouraged by it. They just aren't interested in that field. However, we've just finally gotten so that we have couple of questions now on the final exam, and so the students are beginning to come back to class. But that's how unimportant the subject is. But the church, as I see it, has been and is now in the field of preventive medicine and doing it quite effectively. Because in order to get anybody to change their health habits, you have to motivate them. And the church is in the motivation business. And it seems to me that we are at a position in history now where we can do something about this. The fact that we're talking about holistic medicine reminds us of the shorthand form that we use to describe the whole person, which is just to use the triangle. We used to call this man. Now we call it a person. And when we speak of this triangle, again, realizing that it isn't complete, but it's a shorthand way of saying that we're thinking about body, mind, and spirit. Now, as we look at this person, and as we think about what's happened in medicine in the past 100 years, generally, by the way, Lewis Thomas, who is one of the key writers now in medical fields, he's head of the Sloan Kettering Foundation in New York, and he writes for Omni Magazine, I think it's called, and he's written a number of books now. He feels that scientific medicine really didn't get started until 1885. So it's just 100 years old, and it really didn't get going until the early 1900s. But about that time, they began to get interested in the body in a way that they had not previously. So interest in the body of a scientific nature has been going on for really only about 100 years. And the people who took this on were, of course, the MDs. What they tended to do, because the scientific method is operating in that fashion, is to try to take certain aspects of the body and study it very carefully, which is a wonderful way to do it. But what happened was that kind of divided the person up into parts, and so you had the MDs taking an interest in the body, and that was their part that they looked at. Then, about 50 years ago, closer to 60 now, Freud and a few other people came on the scene and began to raise questions about the fact that when you deal with only bodies and not the mind, you really don't see the whole person. And so, only about 50 years ago, a group of doctors over here got interested in the mind and became what we now call psychiatrists. But soon they found that they were not adequate to take care of it, there weren't enough of them. And so the mind has been pretty well turned over to people in psychology. So you have the PhD, and he sliced off another piece, and now you have the person divided into two parts, at least body and mind. And there was really almost no communication between these two groups at all, even though that was their original intention. But they became so focused upon the mind that they didn't talk to these people, and the people over here didn't talk to those. When I first went on the faculty of the University of Chicago, I found myself in the physician's dining room, and so I was looking to see where I should sit, and a group of psychiatrists were sitting at a table, about eight of them, and they squeezed over and let me sit with them. And I found myself very comfortable with them because I could understand what they were talking about, because that had been my type of training. And I was enjoying myself with them. Until about 2 weeks later, the dean said to me, Granger, I noticed that in the doctor's dining room you sit with a psychiatrist. He said, now that isn't going to help your position with the doctors. Because they hate psychiatrists. And he said, I would suggest that you spend some time sitting with the doctors. Now notice he speaks of the doctors and the psychiatrists as if they were two separate groups. And that's essentially what was going on in 1952 when I started in Chicago. There was just no communication between them, and the doctors hated the psychiatrists. It's improved somewhat, but not all that much, I'm sorry to say. Well, then the ministry began about this same time, 54 years ago, because they were interested in the spiritual side of the person and to some extent in the mental side, but we were kind of given to know that we were to deal with the spirit, the DDs, let's call them. So we sliced off another piece, and when I was doodling one day, that's what I came up with, and as you see, it's the Star of David, which I think is very significant here, that we now see that the Star of David reminds us that, well, let me tell you the story. When I was interested in changing from one school to another and to do a new project called Holistic Health Centers, I was told that I should go over and talk to the head of the Department of Preventive Medicine at the University of Illinois, which is also in Chicago, about 5 miles away. The University of Chicago does not have a Department of Preventive Medicine. The University of Illinois does. And so I was told that he was Jewish, very bright, very interested in new ideas. So I went over and I told him about my idea that I would like to test out putting doctor's offices in churches to see what would happen if you took a family doctor and put him in a church building, remodeled it so that you take a room, let's say this size, and you had 3 or 4 examining rooms, and you had a doctor's office, and then you add a nurse's office, and then you add a pastor's office, so that you have these 3 people working together as a team, and the nurse would be particularly able in the area of patient education and in nutrition, and the pastor would have had specialized training in clinical psychology and holistic or psychosomatic medicine, and put those 3 together, that I felt that we might be able to do some research to show that this was better medicine than medicine practiced only by a doctor. When I got all through telling him the story, he said, I think your idea is very sound, both medically and theologically. I said, oh, theologically? I hadn't expected him to use that word. He said, yeah. He said, after all, your man Jesus. Then he paused and he said, I mean our man Jesus. He said, after all, he came out of the Hebrew culture, which was always interested in the whole person, in the whole society, in the whole nation, and salvation had to do with the whole nation. He said, the trouble with you Christians is you get all screwed up by those Greeks. Well, as we know, that isn't entirely accurate because we're indebted to Greeks also for some holistic concepts, to be sure. But there was also the Greek idea of the separation of body and spirit. And this is what we have tended to promote. And so he said, I think it's a great idea. Let's talk further. And so I've been on the his faculty for some 12 years now. And he is just one of the greatest fellows I've ever had to work with. And he seems to understand what I'm talking about in ways that many Christian doctors seem to have difficulty with. And this kind of surprises me. It surprised me back when I started as chaplain at Augustana Hospital. Right away, 2 doctors who showed interest in my work were the chairman of the Department of Internal Medicine, who was Jewish, and a resident young doctor who was Jewish. About the same time that they showed interest and said, would you like to make rounds with me, each of them, 2 Lutheran doctors, very active in Lutheran Layman's League or whatever, told me that they were sure glad I was there, but I wouldn't have to see their patient because they took care of all that. Because they took care of all that. And when I got to know them, I asked them, what is it you do? Well, I tell them, God bless you. I say, you know, things like that to them. And they know that I'm a Christian. But do you talk to them in any depth at all? Well, I don't have time for that. But they never did ask me to see their patients. Never did. And this has been really surprising to me. There's something about the difference between the Jewish person and the Christian person in this field that confuses me, and maybe you can help me to see this as we work on it through the years. But if I have my choice between a Jewish doctor and a Christian doctor, I will tend to move toward the Jewish doctor because he seems to have no impedimenta that keeps us from working together. The Christian doctor wants to know, what's my denomination? And then if I'm a Lutheran, what kind of a Lutheran? And then I discover he's a Christian Reformed or something and doesn't think we're really saved, so that he can't work with me. It's a strange thing. Well, then if you take this, and if I had drawn it properly and we connect these points, you know what comes out of it. And here, of course, is the circle which can be related to the concept of wholeness. So when we talk about wholeness, we find ourselves spelling it, of course, with a W, because if I took the W out of here, and now I'm back to your question, that wouldn't mean much. So we know that. But the word holistic was first used by Jan Christian Smuts. Strange name. But if you saw the movie Gandhi, you saw him put Gandhi in prison in South Africa, and shortly after, he released Gandhi when he recognized what a great man he was. Smuts wrote a book called Holism, spelled with an H. He coined the word, or at least is given credit by the dictionaries for having coined it, holism and evolution. And what he says in that book, which was written in 1926 while he was out of office, he had been premier of South Africa, he was out of office for 2 years, and then went back. He was also a general in the army. He was, strangely enough, very interested in the ecumenical concept of the world, that everything is interrelated to everything else. And his general statement, if you want a short statement of what he says, is that the whole, W-H-O-L-E, is greater than just the sum of its parts. The whole. In other words, he said, speaking from a physics standpoint perhaps, that particles tend to move toward becoming wholes. And when you look at the new whole, it is different from what any of the parts were before. That you have a new creation. And that we are participating with God in the creativity of his universe as we bring children into the world and particles move toward becoming wholes. And that's the message that I get from him, and that everything is interconnected with everything else. So that this fits beautifully, as I see it, with our Christian philosophy of the way in which God is now creating and continuing to create, and that we are co-creators with God. Now, the question is, what are we going to do about all these new insights that we're getting, and the fact that this is what medical students are now beginning to hear about? When I started at Chicago in 52, there weren't any medical schools doing this, and it just happened that the dean of the University of Chicago said, I think the thing that's wrong with our medical curriculum is that as he put it, to quote him directly, is too damn cold. We need somebody to come in here to warm up this thing. The scientific method is cold. It's not interested in people. Today, there are 125 approximate medical schools in America. I would guess that 100 medical schools have clergymen on their faculties in some way, shape, or form. Sometimes as professors of philosophy of medicine, sometimes as ethicists, mostly as ethicists. And so they're beginning to get this, and I think you're going to see this among young doctors coming out of medical school, because it fits naturally into the new style of understanding the whole person. My interest in the parish has grown out of the fact that I feel that somehow, as long as we do our work only in hospital settings, with the growth of the chaplaincy program, you may be interested, those of you who knew Fritz Norstad, who operated this camp and was director one season, Fritz was one of the early people in the field of hospital chaplaincy, and he trained a number of people in the ALC and the earlier ELC. But the thing that we were aware of was that the hospital tends to deal only with sickness, as I said earlier, and not with the early stages of illness. We find that about a third of the people in hospitals who are very sick, if you look at their history, you find that they didn't do very much about the problem in its early stages when it was most reversible. And they didn't do it because they were hesitant, perhaps, to bother the doctors. Doctors are so busy, or they didn't have enough money to pay a doctor, or they didn't want to spend that amount of money. And so they let it go and let it go until now it was farther advanced and more difficult to reverse. And so my interest was, I really don't want to have my office anymore in a hospital setting. I want to teach medical students along with theological students and nursing students and social work students, to teach medical students all by themselves, sitting in a classroom feeling that they're just special, you know, and that nobody else knows what they know, bothered me. And so that's why I finally said, I would like my classroom or my own office to be out in a parish church. So I've had my office in a parish church for some 11 years now, and I like it that way. If we are to get the parish churches involved in this, the idea that we had originally, and which I'll be glad to describe more in detail later this week, namely the Holistic Health Center, which is a whole doctor's office and a whole variety of helpers, volunteers to help, but it's costly to get one of those things going. And I was lucky, I went to the Kellogg Foundation because I've been eating so many cornflakes in my life, and they responded with a grant to get it started, so that I appreciate that. But we're out of cornflakes, well, we're out of Kellogg money now, so that we don't have that to work with. So now the idea is, how do you expand this idea and make it happen and do it within the cost that a congregation could afford? So now what we've done is to consider the idea of putting just a nurse on the staff of a church, not as a sickness person, not as a place to take care of broken legs or cuts and bruises, though she'd be glad to do whatever needed to be done if that happened. But she's really in the new capacity of a wellness person. During the last three winters, I've been teaching at the University of Arizona Medical School, just happened to pick Arizona for January, February, and March. it's been a lot of fun. I've been in the field of family medicine. And we've been looking at the LCA Lutheran Church right across the street from the medical school. It has about 1,500 members. Ron Levin is the pastor. And it's a live wire church, believe me. And as we've been kicking this around, the dean of the medical school, who is an active member of that church, we came up with the idea, why don't we just, because they don't have enough space, they'd have to build a building to put a holistic health center there. Besides, it's a little close to the medical school, it'd be in competition. So we thought, what if we just put a nurse on the staff of that church? What would that do for that congregation? So we've now developed a research pattern. An evaluation probably would be more accurate. We're comparing that church with another church of about the same size in the same economic level community over a three-year period. We're going to try to discover whether the church that has a nurse on the staff is able to keep its people out of hospitals more than the church that does not have a nurse on the staff. Now, what can this nurse do that would help in the field of prevention, that would help to integrate the spiritual and the physical, and to try to deal with the whole person, body, mind, and spirit? And if we had a foursome, four-sided, we'd say, and the social side, which is the interpersonal relationships, which are absolutely essential too. We see her doing four things. First of all, she is a health educator, and The person we have there is on halftime because we felt that it would be better to start halftime because it's cheaper that way and the average congregation is still quite shocked by a nurse's salary. So we take half of that salary, which is only $11,000 a year that the congregation has to come up with. And she spends roughly 20, 25 hours there a week. She spends probably 4 or 5 hours on Sunday, so she's very visible. She'll read scripture from time to time. She'll take blood pressures. She's available. She goes to church with her family, and so on. But we try to make her very visible and available after the services, except for the one that she's attending, perhaps. And she is first a health educator. This particular person has now related to close to 400 people in 8 months with seminars, workshops, discussion groups, potluck supper groups, all kinds of things. And her job is to gradually raise the level of understanding of that congregation to what health is all about as contrasted with sickness. The second thing she does is to be a personal health counselor. She's available during the week and later on Sunday morning or after the church's services for people who would like to come in to talk to her about personal problems. Particularly, we encourage people to come in when they're just in the early stages of illness, when they just don't feel very good, and not to wait. Because it doesn't cost them a penny to go in if they don't want to pay. If they do, they'd like to leave a donation fine, and people are doing that quite regularly now. We don't ever expect her salary to be paid for in that fashion. We think it should eventually just be a part of the benevolence budget of the congregation, because it's a ministry to people. And so she is now seeing, well, the line is forming to the right already, after only about 8 months. And people are coming in with all kinds of problems. The interesting thing is that more men are coming in than we expected. And as we try to understand this, and the fact that men are saying to her, I'm telling you something today that I have never had enough courage to tell even my doctor. Or I'm telling you something today that I haven't had the courage to tell my minister. But they're telling her, how come? We think, and this is just a theory, that most men have had mothers. Well, I think all men have had mothers. We've grown up with mothers and with aunties, others around us, generally speaking. Now, this is changing, I know, but I'm thinking about men who are in their 40s and 50s now. And when, as children, as little boys, we had our problems and fell down and hurt ourselves and cried. We could run to our mothers and she would hug us and love us. We could do all kinds of awful things, you know, and she'd still love us and hug us. And then one day as we grew a little older, I'm not sure what age, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we got into some trouble or had some problem, we went to a man. And the man said, oh, shut up, you crybaby, or whatever he said. Because the man isn't going to have that nurturing care, generally. The new father is of a different order, I admit. to the laundromat and they said there are more fathers over there than there are mothers doing the laundry. Now that's new, you see. So that may be changing. But for these older men who are coming into the nurse, they're saying, I feel comfortable talking to you. And I think it's related to the fact that we as men feel that you're going to be accepting of us. You're going to take us just as we are without one plea, and you're not going to make us put on a false front the way we have to do when we're with men pastors or men doctors. The third area that she is involved in has to do with developing a group of people in that congregation to help her to do some of the things that she isn't going to be able to have time to do. When we talk about the revolution in healthcare, it's related to the fact that we now have what are called DRGs, and I can never remember what it means. Does anybody remember?
Diagnostic-related groups.
Diagnostic-related groups. They have roughly 425 different illnesses now that are each given a number. And the doctor has to decide what number that patient's problem is. Next to the number is the amount of money that the government through Medicare will pay for that particular procedure. And the hospital is going to have to get, it will get only that much. Now that's generally a decent amount of money, just enough to cover it. But if the patient does not have the kind of progress that's average and has to stay an extra day, that costs the hospital an extra day for that patient, and they do not get paid for it. Which means that many patients are going to have to be asked to leave the hospital when they're not quite ready, when the doctor normally would say, oh, stay another day or two. The doctor will seldom say anymore, oh, stay another day or two. He's going to say, I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, but I think you bet you're going to have to go tomorrow. Which means that a lot of people are going to go home a little weaker, a little sicker, and particularly single people who come into an apartment all by themselves are going to have some help. And so we see this nurse relating to the discharge of patients from hospitals and developing a group of people who will assist her to relate these people, to relate to these people, one maybe to go and get the patient, to take her home, another to offer some food for her when she gets there, another maybe to come to stay overnight, and for the next 2 or 3 days give that kind of assistance, which I think the church is just a natural form. We've been doing that kind of thing for a long time. When I talk about this to doctors, sometimes I say, do you ever think of the church as being a help to you in your work? And generally they say, well, what do you mean? Well, do you see the church as kind of an organization that's helpful to you? Well, no, I never use it. You mean to call up a church or something? No, I never call up a church. I think that the church is in the hospital, is in the health field, and doesn't know it. And so one day I said to a group of ministers I was talking with, what are your churches doing that you would consider helpful to keeping people well, or as kind of assistance to doctors, as kind of collaborators with them in the work that they're trying to do to help people stay well, or to get well after they've been sick, which is usually what it is. So we put down a few things that churches do, and I'm going to read them to you. It's going to take me about 3.5 minutes to read it. But I feel that this information has got to be given to the medical field to realize that in America, and in other countries no doubt too, but in America to be sure, these are the things that are going on, all of them I think related to keeping people well. Many congregations are involved in several of the following ministries which help keep people well. Start with a fellowship hour on Sunday morning, coffee hours, which I hope eventually will become milk hours or orange juice hours or something, at least decaf hours. And in connection with the many weekday meetings that we have, these social times, when friendships develop, and friendships of the right kind tend to keep people well. Just no doubt about it. The book on the broken heart shows how loneliness is one of the major causes of illness in our day. And people who have nobody to be with, they actually have statistics now to show that these people are the people who get sick easiest and who die younger. Youth groups, events, many with health-giving components, sporting events and so on. Overnight retreats for adults of all ages, for children mostly of all ages, held in places away from the usual stresses of living. Blood pressure checks by volunteer nurses in the churches, blood drives and health fairs, healthcare themes on certain Sundays of the church year, knowing that what is the fifth of all the New Testament of the Gospels deals with the healing ministry of Christ. Informal social services available through volunteers, and formal services available through church-related social agencies all across the country. Frequent special offerings to assist people in special times of need. Benevolence budgets constituting 20 to 50% of total church budget. And part of this goes for medical missions and social causes. Food pantries. Oh, today more churches have food pantries than since the last Depression. Meals on Wheels for the homebound. Sewing groups making medical supplies. Intergenerational programs of all types, youth projects relating to the elderly in the community. And by the way, we do have a couple, are you still there? No? Yes, we now have some elderly homes where they do have animals. My brother is in one, and the couple dogs they have there are just a delight to for most of the people there. Involvement with hospice programs. If you want to know what a holistic program looks like, I think the hospice program is about as holistic as it can get. And if you see a group of hospice workers all in a circle for their staff meetings, and you'll see a doctor and a nurse and a social worker and a nutritionist and a pharmacist and a pastor and several more. In other words, you've got a beautiful grouping there. And hospice has, just as you know, swept across America only in the last, 10-12 years. A couple of our hospitals where I have been a consultant have resisted having hospices. I just can't understand it. But they won't be able to resist it much longer. Volunteers available for every conceivable kind of emergency in many churches, often through an organized group such as FISH. Strong health emphasis in premarital counseling. Sermons and feedback discussions where people learn to articulate their faith questions and insights, often dealing with Jesus' ministry of healing and wholeness. Daycare centers for working mothers and fathers. Emergency and prayer telephone networks among members. Elderly daycare centers with daily, weekly, or monthly meals. Educational courses in church school and confirmation classes related to health and prevention. Potluck neighborhood support groups building friendships. Ongoing Bible study groups, which are also human support groups. Special seminars and workshops on health topics, often related to loss, stress, life changes, grief, outlook on life. Regular outings for both youth and elderly. Volunteer drivers to take elderly and ill to the doctor's office, to hospitals, to go shopping, etc. Volunteers who assist with domestic chores for the sick. And then finally, many churches provide space and leadership for no smoking clinics, Alcoholics Anonymous, parenting groups, stress management workshops, nutrition seminars, marriage support groups, visiting nurse groups, well baby clinics, compassionate friends, mental health groups, exercise classes, birthing classes, premarital conferences, health fairs. In other words, every church has the potential of becoming a wellness center. If churches will eventually have well-qualified nurses on their staffs to coordinate and encourage more intentional development of this health aspect of the church's life, then many illnesses could be picked up in their early stages when they are often reversible. The churches of America hold great promise in motivating people to see that whole person health care must include the spiritual dimension. Now, let me stop there and let you come at me with any of your reflections and comments or questions.
What was the fourth thing that the nurses...
Fourth thing, yes. The third thing was that she develops these people with help. The fourth is a simple one, namely that she relates to the many support groups that are already available in the community, which many people who are sick don't even know exist. We counted in the Cook County area of Chicago roughly 50 support groups available of all types, and the average person isn't aware of these. So the nurse gets to be a close friend of the social workers in her church, and works with them. She also has what we call a health cabinet or a health committee that she reports to, and is available. And those people are often people who have special skills, and that's the group that she meets with once a month.
How far into your comparative study in Arizona are you?
Well, we've just done the questionnaire that has gone to every member of the congregation. This is done by the research department of the University of Arizona, so we have nothing to do with it except to tell them what
we
have.
How long have you been in the
8 months, but we haven't. This is going to be a 3-year study. We had to get a grant for that outside, but we got a foundation in Phoenix that picked up the tab for that. Yes? Oh, I thought I saw it here. Yes?
Just a thought, and it was, I think it all sounds really wonderful. But I was interested in, is there anything that's being done to actually take this community that is being gathered or drawn through this church and work with the sort of the pure, raw, healing energy of the interrelationships of those people? And I guess that comes out of maybe the time that I went through my mother's death, things became so simplified that in the end, because she did go through a healing process, in her dying process, which was very much like a birthing process. And I feel like what I realized out of that was such a powerful realization of the simple healing power of love. And how far away, you know, all of us have gotten from that in a way of learning how we can be the counselor, the minister, the doctor, the friend who's there for each other. And the development of those kinds of ways where we all play those roles back and forth, as well as the nurse that's on the staff, the pastor that's on the staff, or whoever else.
Beautifully said, because you don't have to be a professional to accomplish these things any more than you have to be a pastor to be able to tell them mm-hmm. the good news of the gospel. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're involved in. What is your work?
I'm an artist and work in visual communication for print. I guess I study photography more from a metaphysical point of view, using the camera as a tool to see. I see it symbolically. I'm interested in the use of images in the process of healing, and working with imagery, trying to work on a way I can do some things with slide presentations and images for that purpose, for communication purposes.
Now, if you lived in the Chicago area and were involved in the present experiment that we're doing with Lutheran General Hospital, which, by the way, is an ALC hospital, I think is the hospital, the one hospital in the whole world that has worked hardest at trying to integrate the spiritual, the medical, the mental, and the physical. It's the only hospital I know that has 32 full-time chaplains. Imagine that, 850 beds. They're going to have to cut back now because of the revolution in health. But they'll cut back for the next year to say 22 chaplains, which is still a lot more than the average hospital of 850 beds, which would have maybe three, two often, some just one. If you were in the Chicago area, you see, we would then have you spend a couple hours with the nurses that we're using. We're taking six churches. These nurses will meet with us at Lutheran General Hospital a half a day a week. We will build a curriculum based on the experiences they're having in their congregations. And a part of the training will be exactly along the lines that you're describing. But we have to have people like you available, and if we don't, we can't do all these things. But I'm pleased to say that I'm hearing more reflections of the type of reflection you've just given than I've ever heard before. Mm-hmm. And so this is now going to be coming across the...
Well, I'd like to talk with you more later, because I'm sure there's other people too that maybe have their own thoughts and things that they're trying to integrate and share in this realm, but it's hard to know how do you connect what you're working on into these things. And I think that's what's taking the time, is to find out who else is doing what and how we can all work.
There's another question over here. Yes.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, there could be a heck of a lot of this kind of basic work done if we would help our people in the parish be loving and caring for each other.
That's where it starts.
That's the basis, isn't it?
And part of that is to make people feel welcome in the church and not be lonely people waiting for somebody to come up and say hello to them. Well, I see our time is up. But one more question, Chuck.
Well, I was going to build on the same thing that Bill was saying. It seems to me that largely missing from the list of what the pastors came up with is the very broad understanding of what churches are meant to be, which is proclaimers of a message of acceptance no matter what, and of giving meaning to life that's very meaningless for a lot of people and very complicated for a lot of people. And secondly, to be communities of acceptance, which no other community in our society really majors in, and a lot of churches don't major in either, but when we're faithful to what we're called to be, we're authentic communities of acceptance. And it seems to me that's pretty basic to hope to wellness. To wellness.
The phrase, you are accepted, has to be really one of the themes of this thing. I think it was Randall Niebuhr who used to say, you have to say that three times, you are accepted.
Tillich has a famous sermon on that, you are accepted.
Tillich, you are accepted. You are accepted. In other words, if you say it three times, emphasizing a different word each time, it really has tremendous potential, and I'm awfully glad you brought that up. Yes, one final question.
One of the models that was helpful in the Seattle area for, I think, the medical profession to see the clergy as a helping team was at Group Health Hospital. A group of clergymen in the area got together who had counseling skills and formed an oncology group for families of cancer patients, and met with the nurses and the people on the staff and work together with these people, the members of the family and so forth.
Yeah, like the hospice.
Yeah.
What hospital was that?
That was Group Health.
Group Health.
Right.
So the HMO then is working with this. See you tomorrow.
Oh.